This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by Paul McGonigal, head football coach at Endicott College, in our continuing series with area football coaches. Paul, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be back. Hope you had a great summer, and can't believe it's already here.
I know, exactly. So for Endicott College, they are opening up. Players coming into town, and practices are starting. September 2nd, the first game for you guys. It's coming up fast, man. So I guess let's get right down to it. Before we get into a bit more about you, Paul, I will ask you for the big picture of where things are at right now for Endicott football, because there's been some physical improvements over there at the field and so on. And just give us a fast update on where you're at right now.
Yeah, you know, the college, just every year since I've been there, they've always expanded or added new buildings or renovations. We just opened up a brand new exercise science nursing building right across from the stadium. It's beautiful, top notch. And then we just did a new field turf on the Hempstead, and then a new scoreboard, and also renovations to our locker room. So obviously, you know, can't ask for anything else. It's been a great, you know, great summer, all that stuff. We're all kind of cramming in here, loading the stuff last minute, which is a good problem to have. But from, you know, President DeSalvo to Greg Dagning with the facilities, and Mark Kulikowski and AD Brian Wild, everybody's just been great helping us out the whole way.
All right, Paul, I'm going to get right to it on these feature interviews. We kind of go back with our coaches as early as possible. And I'll try to breeze through as much as we can with you. But, Paul, what's the earliest you remember having any kind of association with football, whether it be just a football in the room or any kind of organized football?
I would say, you know, just like any kid growing up in New England, we all, you know, just kind of played, you know, tackle football or whatnot, or just all sports. I think most of my youth, I won the hockey was my favorite sport for a while. But I was pretty fortunate. I had an older brother, you know, who played high school football. So when I was in middle school, he would always allow me to go, you know, play with his friends, whether it was, you know, tackle football up front, or they threw me a net, you know, for street hockey, and at high school guys, you know, rifling tennis balls and pucks at me. So I guess that's kind of had it by default. But growing up, you know, the Patriots really weren't on TV that much. When I was a young kid, I always watched the Cowboys or the, you know, the Giants and the Eagles were always on TV. So just kind of watching that, and just like everybody else, just kind of developed a love for it. And probably more college football love than NFL as a young kid.
Let me just jump to, so tell me about high school. Where was that, and what did you do on the field in high school?
I grew up in Reading, but I went to Malden Catholic High School. So I didn't go to Reading High, and, you know, played football and hockey and baseball, and kind of was more of a, I should say, late bloomer. But again, I think a lot of it had to do with, I didn't play Pop Warner because of, you know, growing up, I want to play hockey and just kind of focus on that, and baseball, and spent the summers, which I, on the tail of it, and now my daughters, is all the summer baseball tournaments or hockey leagues and stuff like that. So I played hockey, then I was fortunate, throughout the year, then ended up playing football, and then ended up fortunate to have an opportunity to play at the University of Kentucky. So I went there, University of Kentucky, for 4 years, and I think what helped me coaching-wise, I'd say two things. One was my Little League baseball coaches. One was my father, but also I still call him Coach Richard and Coach Moore by default. But also, and as a student athlete at the University of Kentucky, you know, I had two coaches. I had Bill Curry for 2 years, who, excuse me, was Johnny Unitas' center and played for Vince Lombardi. And then when they got let go, they hired Al Mummy. Excuse me, sorry about that, of all the times. And Coach Leach, who's recently passed away, was head coach of Mississippi State, and Sonny Dykes was my position coach, who was the head coach at TCU this past year. So, learned a lot by default. Sorry, I don't know what just happened. Don't edit that part out.
Well, it sounds like you're going around a rotary, Paul. At least in your throat.
What's going on here? I'm good now. I'm good. I got my bearings back.
All right.
My voice ready for camp.
All right. So, yeah, there you go. You've already lost your voice. But I can understand it with all the moving you're doing. But what about – so at Kentucky, where did you play?
I played tight end. I played tight end at the University of Kentucky, and so I was there. And it was kind of going back to the coaching part. It was my first 2 years, you know, as the offensive coordinator, we were what's called the two tight end set. And then when Coach Mummy came in, we went to more of a spread set. So, you know, didn't play like a flex tight end, more of a still blocking tight end. But I got to see not only two different styles, but also two different schemes. You know, two different styles from coaching and whatnot. Like I said earlier, I don't know if you heard me before, my coughing fit, you know, Sonny Dykes, the head coach at TCU, he was my position coach as well. So it being an 18, 19, 20-year-old, you know, young man, you know, you don't have any idea who you're surrounded by and see how they are now, and some of them are still, you know, going strong. But, you know, play tight end and special teams.
All right, I'm just maybe take us through the transition as to how you got into coaching, because you right away you went into college coaching as an assistant. So maybe tell us about your thought process and what were the elements that happened that led you down that path.
So I think I always probably throughout college wanted to get into coaching, and I was helping out the staff at Kentucky in the spring and, you know, potential graduates, what's called a graduate assistant position, and then at the time Northeastern was a member of what would be the CAA now, 1AA FCS school, and we have the number one offense in the country, and Tim Couch, my quarterback, was number one pick in the draft. So just like anywhere else, hey, what's the hot offense? Where do you want to go visit? And they came out as a staff and visited, and they were looking for a coach, and, you know, my coach said, hey, we got a guy, you know, Paul McGonigal is finishing up. He's going to help us out, but he's from, you know, Massachusetts, he's from Boston, and da-da-da-da. So I went up there, went on an interview, and it brought me, enlightened me, let me say that, to the coaching profession, where I think, here I am, I'm going to get paid X amount of money and get a place in Boston, to realizing, oh no, this is the salary, and can I live at home for a year back in my house, because you don't, you know, whatnot. So I was able, fortunate to do that, and Barry Gallup was the head coach at the time, and people from New England should know Barry Gallup's a longtime assistant at Boston College, actually helped coach and recruit Doug Flutie. And then he was at Northeastern for many years as a head coach, went back to BC. So I was there at Northeastern for a year, and then, not to bore everybody with the background, but at about March that year, I left to go to Eastern Kentucky University back down south. And Eastern Kentucky is one of the all-time winningest 1AA FCS programs in college football history. And Roy Kidd was the head coach at the time. He's now in the Hall of Fame with, I think, 317 career victories, like sixth or seventh all time. So I was very fortunate at a young age to sit in those staff rooms and meetings with all those coaches and kind of learn you know, different schemes, different developments and stuff like that. It made you, and also coming from Division One, where, you know, you fly for chartered and buses, police escorts, now we're going to play James Madison, but we're flying, you know, we're flying to Washington, we're getting a bus, you know, for 2 hours, we're staying, you know, hotel extra night. As a young coach, you're getting in charge of the, you know, attendance and meals and stuff like that. So it was a great experience and overall. So that's kind of how I got to start with it. And it's like any coach, you kind of move around a lot. And I always joke that all three of my girls were born in three different states. That happened before I bounced around. I was fortunate to be a young FCS coordinator. Came up to Bentley in 03, and we had a great year back down in Long Island. But long story long, you know, I've been back in Massachusetts since 2007.
Right, exactly. Maybe to cut to the chase, tell us about the process that led you in the end of the day to Endicott back, 6-7 years ago now?
Yeah, so I was in the conference initially, the head coach of Fitchburg State for 4 years, and then after Fitchburg, I actually came to Endicott as assistant coach in 11 and 12, I think. So I was assistant, and then when Endicott, you know, decided to make a coaching change, you know, obviously wanted to put my name in for it, because I knew with the place, I knew the value of the place, and I knew how the administration and everybody here values not only educationally but athletics. That's kind of how it entailed. one thing I tell all my coaches now is you never know when you're being evaluated. So obviously there's an interview process when you interview for any job, but I already had half my interview because for 2 years as assistant, I'm still walking around the hallways or, you know, on game day coaching or whatever's needed. So it's just kind of a, you know, telltale is you never know how you're being evaluated down the road.
No, that is a good point. Certainly, if you move up within an organization, that's very valuable information to keep in the back of your mind or keep top and center, I guess, actually. Front and center, yeah.
Yes, and then but at the same time, I mean, I have no idea the head job would open years later, but I'm also interviewing there where, hey, this is a place someday down the road I'd see myself coming back to as well. And overall, it's been a great experience. We've been back since 2018, and it's a great place to work, and, you know, still stuff to work on, but, you know, and it's just, you see the campus itself, it speaks for itself.
No, absolutely. So let me ask you this about some of the influences that you have had. You've already mentioned these guys, some of your coaches, former coaches. How does it translate to what you are doing exactly today? Because who would have thought this guy down in Kentucky many years ago would be coaching and there'd be a beach ball theme, so to speak, at where he's coaching. So maybe take us through this this timeline, if you will, to that.
Well, you know, years ago, obviously, there wasn't hashtags, so you kind of develop over time. I think everywhere you go, for the most part, you're going to, you know, you're going to take different pieces and stuff like that. Like, you know, being an assumption, you know, working for Coach Chesney, I learned a lot from him. And, you know, so some of the stuff we do here, some of the stuff we did there at Assumption, because obviously it worked. You see what Coach Chesney's track record and what he's doing now at Holy Cross. But, you know, you take stuff from that coach or Coach Kidd who's Kentucky or Coach Yetton when I was at Bentley was the all-time, one of the all-time winningest New England coaches. So to me, it's always, hey, if I'm king for a day, things I want to do, things I wouldn't do. And then, you know, you think you have all the answers. They said the seat, you realize, oh, wait, now I see why this coach did this or this coach did that. And like I said, a lot of it goes back to my father or, you know, the Little League coaches, you know, that I had, or my father in the Air Force, so kind of some of that discipline from him, or a Coach Curry played for Vince Lombardi, obviously tailored over the years, but, and then nowadays it's more social media, you know, where we're going over the preseason schedule for tomorrow, and, you know, the old school in me says, ah, you know, back in my day, I never thought I'd say that, but, you know, we had 2 days or 3 days or whatever, now it's not the case, but I think the best thing you do as a coach is, you're only as good as your staff, and I have a great staff, but not only that, is you have to adapt to the times, you know?
Yeah, and let me just follow up, because that's where I wanted to go. So you mentioned the phrase, back in my day, but I have to think it's more complicated today with today's student athlete, if you will, college athlete. Not that it can't be done. Obviously, there's a lot of great coaching going on. So just tell me what do you think the approach to a college athlete, how is it different today than it was, say, 20 years ago?
Well, obviously social media. And I think the biggest difference now is the transfer, you know, and some of these young men or women, you know, they go to these schools, they're told X, Y, and Z, and they realize it's not that, whether it's a football thing or an academic thing or cost thing. Our biggest selling point is since we've been at Endicott, it's since 2018, we have not had one player transfer to go play football anywhere else. Not one. And that's just a huge selling point, you know, in addition to the education, the internships, all that stuff. And, yeah, we've had some success in the field, but we've also been number one academically in the conference over the years. And I think to adjust to the times where, looking back now versus the way it was and the way it is now for practices, like, yeah, but there's also more time to walk through. Now some of the science says, hey, ramp this period up, ramp this period down. But I think I'm going to guess a lot of Division III coaches there will agree. Like, the transfer portal has been, if anything, has been better for us because, not that we're getting transfers, but some of these higher-level schools are taking young men in, and then there's a big trickle-down effect for the high school players for us. So we're getting those four-year players versus, hey, I showed up, I'm a freshman quarterback, after second practice, I didn't get the reps I thought, I'm out of here. You know, I think that's the biggest challenge is how many guys can actually, or women can stick through the 4 years. You know, I try to tell them all the time is, when I was in college, I wasn't all conference. I wasn't a full-time starter. But at the same time, when I see my teammates, it's kind of like that hidden, hey, we survived 4 years from the 6 a.m. workouts, the 2-a-days, whatever. It's something that, you know, someone can never take away from you.
Let me just digress for a quick second here, Paul. How many walk-ons do you guys get? I mean, you must get walk-ons coming to Endicott, one for the school, but then maybe they think they could play some football as well?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, technically, Bill, everybody's a walk-on because we don't have scholarships.
Okay, yep.
If you look at it that way, yeah, there's financial aid, there's academics, but there's only so much we can do. If he's only going to get this amount of money based off his academics or his family situation, we do have young men that'll reach out, you know, hey, you know, because we're not perfect. We may miss somebody and they fall through the cracks in the recruiting process, or I think, you know, we have a pretty good grasp, good relationship with the coaches in the air. I think they trust us. And, you know, we'll be honest with them the whole time. But just like in recruiting, you know, we have some guys that come on late. Maybe some guys we don't know about. To me, the best ones that we don't know about are almost the ones that are students. And maybe this is what you're asking. And they come out in January, you know, after the second semester, realize, hey, I wanted to play. And they go through the winter workouts, the spring practices, you know, because now they're going to walk across campus in the morning to lift. Like, that to me is, you know, that's what you're going to do in any sport.
All right, Paul, I'm down to my last question here. So think about this one here. So you're a football coach now, but, you know, you were a player and, you know, an assistant coach, head coach now, obviously. Has there been one game or a couple of games that really stand out to you, impactful? Maybe one you were at, but maybe one that you watched on TV, pro, college, whatever. Something that that kind of just sticks with you. Could be, like I said, could be a pro game, but could be anything. Is there that kind of a game that stands out to you, or a couple of games that maybe impacted your coaching? I guess is where I'm going with that, or your thinking. Yeah.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I always go back to the '93 Notre Dame Florida State game at Notre Dame. Florida State had Charlie Ward. They were number one in the country. They went to Notre Dame, and it was a dogfight. It came down to the end. And you just look at some of the NFL guys on that roster. Just as a college fan, you know, growing up, and Charlie Ward, the player he was before his time, you know what I mean, where he would have been now. in college, you know, I mean, as a player, you know, well, no, you're talking as a coach or a fan.
Well, no, either one is impactful anywhere, yeah.
I mean, obviously, my junior year, we beat Alabama for the first time in 75 years. I thought that was pretty pretty good, pretty memorable. I think the year was 2008 or five, when the Boise State Oklahoma game, the one that went to overtime, and Boise State won either in overtime or right there in the game, and they had like a hook and ladder to like a fourth down, and then the running back on it, they went for two to win the game, and then the running back proposed to his girlfriend like right afterwards. You gotta I don't know if I've packed it, but I think, again, long answer your question, I think as coaches, you know, you love what you do when we'll work all week, long hours, we'll coach a game on a Saturday, and when we get home Saturday night, the first thing we put on is whatever game is on. Like, a lot of people, whatever profession they are, aren't going to continue to do that on a Saturday night. And then working around Sundays, you're now watching an NFL game or something. So I think obviously the Patriot run has been great as a New England fan, but there's so many games and over time. But I don't know if I'm answering your question or not, I'm making sense, but I thought there's so many out there right now. I don't think a lot of people listening in another 93 Notre Dame, Florida State game.
No, I mean, I think those are great games, but I got to, let me just jump back to you. You mentioned Kentucky, Alabama. So yeah, that, I mean, not that that is a definitive game necessarily big picture for you, but I can't imagine not being a part of that game, so to speak, knocking Alabama off as you did. How many wins in a row did they have, or what did you see? Yeah.
I So it was the first time Kentucky beat Alabama in 75 years. Now, in Kentucky's defense, we didn't play Alabama every year. It was like a 2-year on, 4-year off, like the way the SEC back then. But the only surviving member from the team, the starting quarterback, they literally took out of the hospital. I think they had to, like, sign a waiver to get him out because he wasn't doing well. He was in the game, at the game. And we won in overtime. And I remember the fans raided the field. They took down the field goal post. And I remember my dad was at the game. And I remember, like, jumping into the stands and, like, giving my dad, like, the biggest hug. Or when we beat LSU in overtime, my senior and my brother and mother were there and, you know, giving them a hug, you know what I mean? And, you know, stuff like that. But it was definitely, obviously, a great parent support. But just to me, like, no one thought we were going to win. And it was just, it was crazy. You know, because in overtime, too, it came down to they fumbled, so all we had to do was kick a field goal or score a touchdown. And I was on the field goal team, and I was the wing, and they had this guy by the name of Deshaun Townsend, who ended up playing for the Steelers for a year. He was, like, topping, like, block field goals. We already kicked one or two that game. So I believe it's third down, and I remember I was, like, my brain thinking, like, we're going to have to kick a field goal to win, and this guy's going to be coming, you know, right at me. We scored on the third down. It was a third and 10 or whatever we converted, and we ended up scoring on it and a missed tackle, and part of me was relieved to win. Part of me was like, oh, great, I don't have to worry about doing that next. So, yeah, there's plenty of wins as coach. I think biggest thing at Kentucky was, you know, we went from, building the team to getting ranked and stuff like that. I mean, my junior year we played, you know, Tennessee, and it was Tim Couch versus Peyton Manning. It was the two, you know, top number one picks back-to-back, so that was a pretty cool game, too.
Absolutely. Great stuff. So here is my absolute last question. So when here's the opportunity for you to be out on that field goal unit. So just to clarify, you were relieved when you didn't have to do that. I'm sent, and I would be, too, I think, right?
Well, looking back now as a coach, you can see, but I remember the coach telling me, like, you're good. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Then part of me was like, you're not helping me by asking if I'm good five times, you know. that's one of the ones that, I mean, you go, well, you're trained for it and you're ready to go. You don't think about it in the moment, but it's like thinking of, you know, when you start thinking of what it actually means, and that's why I think you try to, like, break down games instead of worry about the outcome. You stay in the moment. And the situation comes, and it wasn't like a blowout. It wasn't like we're up by 10. It was literally like the play where they still talk to this day. Like the governor signed some petition. I don't even know. I mean, it's years ago now. They've had great teams since. But looking back now, I stood at the picture in my 40 to 34. I stood at the picture in my basement with the field goal post turned down. But you know, but as a parent, you get just as much jubilation when you're, you know, your daughter hits a home run at a high school game or gets a kill in a volleyball game or, you know, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of different ways of looking at it.
No, absolutely. Well, Paul, we appreciate your time to share some of these stories with us and our listeners, obviously. And we'll be back in touch very soon for your getting ready for your opener against St. Lawrence at home on September 2, coming right up, and the team coming back into town now. So, Paul, thanks again for your time and your insights and great learning a little bit more about Paul McGonigal. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Great to be back again.
Yep. Paul McGonigal, head football coach, Endicott College. I'm Bill Newell here on MSONewsSports.com.